You would take your Bible and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 13. And last week we looked at some principles for making decisions. And this was one of the verses we looked at under the principle of being an example. We have to make a lot of decisions the Bible does not speak explicitly to. And this is one of those that gives you a principle. So he walks the Corinthians through, and in verse 13 of chapter 8, he says, "Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, that I might not cause my brother to stumble." He said, there's some, they've come out of paganism, and if they saw me eating meat, it would cause them to think that I was worshiping a pagan god. Now, that's not true. And Paul said, I know there's nothing in the meat. But he didn't do it based on that. He said, if it'll cause my brother to stumble, if he's going to look at me and the example I'm setting would cause him to fall back, to not follow Christ, to be hurt, he said, I have already decided I'll never eat meat again the rest of my life. What a decision. Well, I want to talk to you about a subject this morning, and that is gambling. We're looking at making decisions, and so we all have to make a decision about gambling, particularly in our culture. Is it right or is it wrong? Gambling. Is it right or wrong? A little over 50 years ago, our government sought out and sentenced Lucky Luciano for operating his gambling enterprise. Were they right or were they wrong? For you see, today, many in government, they no longer want to prosecute, but they want to partner with modern-day Lucky Lucianos. Are they right or are they wrong? We're not asking whether lottery or casino gambling or bingo or individual gambling, we're not asking whether those are right or wrong. We're asking, is gambling in and of itself, is that right or wrong? In 1994, the voters of Oklahoma voted 69% to 31% against the state lottery. In 1998, they voted 2-1 against casino gambling. Were the voters right or wrong? There is at this very moment a man who has entered the gubernatorial race of Oklahoma, and his platform, he can solve all our problems. He has a solution. The solution is legalized gambling. Is he right or is he wrong? Well, I want us to look at this question, and I want to tell you at the very outset that I reject gambling, and I reject it on three accounts. I reject it morally, I reject it economically, and I reject it logically. So I want to show you, number one, I reject it morally because it is morally reprehensible. I don't know how in the world somebody can seek to follow all that's taught in the New Testament and the example of our Lord Jesus Christ and then turn around and try to defend gambling. I think it's like Abraham Lincoln said about drinking. He said, drinking has many defenders, but no defense. I don't know of one person whose heart is really after Jesus Christ and God is really using them that is condoning gambling. Now, you say, well, I know some Christians who condone and so forth. Well, I do too. That's not the question. And what they say is, well, you know, the Bible doesn't really say, thou shalt not gamble. And they're exactly right. It does not say that. However, it doesn't say, thou shalt not place thy child into an oven and bake thy child at 450 degrees or until they are done. But I don't think there's anybody in here that doubts that cooking kids is not kosher, even though the Bible doesn't say it. So that's what we learned last week, that there are a lot of things the Bible doesn't speak explicitly to, but in principle it does. And we looked at those principles, and you can just think about those, and I'll give you a few verses to keep in mind as we walk through this and try to evaluate personally before our Lord God if this is right or if this is wrong. The principles were, does it edify? Does it enslave? Does it help in evangelizing? Is it an example? Does it exalt God? And the last one was, is it expedient? Will it help me in my Christian walk if I do it? If we're going to gamble and say it's right, we ought to base it on the Word of God and the principles of God. Let me give you two or three scriptures, and this is one of them we just looked at. Mark 12:31, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Luke 6:31, and just as you want people to treat you, treat them in the same way. Romans 13:10, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Galatians 6:10, so then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially to those who are of the household of faith. We are to promote what is good. And you know what? Gambling, it is built on two premises that are absolutely diametrically opposed to what we just read. Number one, it is built on the premise, in order for someone to win, someone must lose. That's not true in regular commerce. But in gambling, for one person walks off and says, I am a winner, somebody else had to lose for them to do that. Secondly, it appeals to the weaknesses of the human heart. It appeals to our baser elements as human beings, not to the higher of the imago Dei, self-centeredness, selfishness, me first, and getting something for nothing. Before Mississippi had casino gambling, they had no chapters of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now they have a multitude of them. Judge Ted Emanuel of County Justice Court, Tunica County, Mississippi, says, quote, dope trafficking has increased, robberies have increased, theft has increased, burglaries have increased, the caseloads of those in law enforcement have tripled and quadrupled, end quote. That is just since the beginning of casino gambling. Henry Lee is a businessman for 55 years in Tunica, Mississippi. He says, the gambling is hurting people. After losing their savings, even their family farms, several have committed suicide. Of those who try to gamble and see whether they're going to like it or not, 10 to 15% of them will become gambleholics statistically. The suicide rate for a pathological gambler is 200 times that of the national average. 10 students at Carter High School in Dallas, Texas, some of them members of the championship football team, thought they'd just do a little bit of gambling. It was just a fun thing. They weren't going to do it for much. Before long, the stakes went up. Before long, they got in debt. And those students found themselves standing in court facing armed robbery charges where they had robbed people at gunpoint in order to pay their gambling debt. It has a seedy, seedy side to it. Listen to this. People say, well, I don't think it'll cause any crime. And they say, if you have illegal gambling, if you legalize it, you won't have a problem. Well, U.S. Department of Justice, Organized Crime Section reports, and I quote, the rate of illegal gambling in those states which have some legalized form of gambling was 3 times higher as in those states where there was not legalized gambling, end quote. Now, I'm going to tell you personally, and again, I ashamedly admit it, but before I was a Christian, I gambled and I was a bookie for a while. And I want to tell you, when we booked, when the horse track opened up, which was from February through April, or the dog track, the saying was that bookies came out of the woodwork, and I was one of them that came out of the woodwork. When that season was gone, wouldn't book anymore. But while it was there, there was so much illegal gambling because the presence of legalized gambling does not diminish illegal gambling, but it creates a desire and the convenience of a bookie. And so there are thousands of dollars to be made, even on a little scale. William Webster, a former FBI director, said, quote, "I really don't see how one can expect to run legalized gambling anywhere without serious problems. Anytime organized crime sees an opportunity to put a fix on something, to get an edge on something, it'll be there. And gambling is still the largest source of income for organized crime." New York Times, when all of the gambling panacea was being spread and it was beginning to be voted on state after state, 1980, wrote an article, said, "Gambling is a business so rich, so fast, so powerful, and perhaps so unsavory that it cannot help but undermine the government." It doesn't matter what report you read, it doesn't matter how you look at it, whether you look at it anecdotally, whether you look at it by statistics, it is morally reprehensible. But secondly, it is economically unjustifiable. And just like the gubernatorial candidate today, the way it is packaged and the way it is sold is that it'll bring money to the state. It'll make us all richer. It'll pay off this. It'll provide more schooling. It'll provide more police. That is the way it is packaged. Hot Springs, where I pastored for 13 years in Arkansas, now it has a history of being a gambling place. Back in the 50s, it had casinos, it had slot machines. It was illegal, but the governors knew about it, and it was just a protected racket. And years ago, Al Capone and all the mobsters would come there and stay and gamble and so forth. So it has this history, has a racetrack that comes every year, and for a little over 2 months, and the gambling becomes pretty high, about 50,000 people a day come into the city in order to gamble. And a survey was done of the 474 businesses there in the city proper, and they were asked this question: does the track meet benefit your business financially? 29% of them said yes. 71% said no. Of the 29% that said it benefited it, only 10% said significantly. You have to understand who's getting benefited: hotels and restaurants. But all of the other ones, even insurance agencies, dry cleaners, grocery stores, all of their business declined during that period. You see, gambling is a zero-sum game. It doesn't create wealth. It diverts wealth from somewhere else to the gambling. They said there was a drop in employee productivity. They said there was a drop in the number of customers that came in, and there was a drop in the accounts being paid on, and utility companies had harder times collecting. And I owned a business for several years in Little Rock, which was 50 miles away from there, and it was coin laundries, and I had them in Little Rock and North Rock. Now, you would think that nothing could hurt the coin laundry business because we have to wash our clothes. But that's not true. Every year when the horse racing came, my business declined precipitously, and then it came back right after the horses had left. You know why? Because they wanted to gamble. You say, well, how could they do that? They'd have to wear their clothes dirtier. Got it. Rather be at the track dirty than not at the track clean. So they would wear their clothes longer, wash less, so they could go to the track and gamble. Circle K and Safeway representatives said they would have rather never sold a lottery ticket. They only did it because their competitors were doing it. 1 year after California started the state lottery, Holiday Quality Food put an article in the paper and it said, quote, "Since the California State Lottery Program started, we have sold in excess of $1 million worth of lottery tickets. Our food business during the same period of time has declined by the same amount. Morally, we feel that it is wrong for us to offer our customers the opportunity to gamble with their food dollars, and therefore we will no longer be selling California State Lottery tickets," end quote. And so they made the choice, but it wasn't just morally, it was economically. They were doing $1 million less business, and yet they were selling $1 million worth of lottery tickets. The International Conference on Gambling, which was held in 1994 in Nashville, Tennessee. Michigan's Attorney General Frank J. Kelly said, quote, "The issue of gambling and its impact on Michigan has been the most troubling of my 33-year term." John Kent, the commerce and legal policy professor at the University of Illinois, said, "Gambling is the black hole of any economy, sucking money out of the local economy because it's a zero-sum game. For every job created by gambling, the rest of the economy will probably lose two jobs." Now, when you get into these battles and you're dealing with gambling, and all of a sudden you find out that the thoroughbred tracks or the race tracks, the quarter horse track, they're with you. They're opposing casino gambling. And somebody says, you know, they don't even like it either because they think it's unsavory. No, that's not true. They don't like it because it'll kill their business. Horse racing for the last two decades, horse race gambling has been declining. And when you put a casino next to a horse track, the horse track owners know this, the horse track goes under. So they'll do one of two things. They'll either side with you that are opposing it, or they will try to write the amendment in such a way that they will be able to control, or it'll be on their property. But they know they cannot survive. And let me tell you something else. You get in these battles and you find out how much money is really involved. When we were involved in fighting casino gambling in Arkansas, and I was called one day, we were going to have a meeting in a day or two with a committee that was heading up the state battle against it, and I got a call from one of the members and they said, "Guess what? We just got a phone call. We have about $4 million. All we have to say is we want it to use at our disposal to do anything we want to fight casino gambling. But there's a hitch. It's coming from the casino owners that border our state. $4 million, just like that. Just offered it to us. And so we decided as a committee that if we lost, we'd lose, but we would not be bedfellows with those who were doing it somewhere else. Then they just said this. They said, "All right, you don't have to be a partner with us. Just tell us where you want us to spend it, and we'll do it." We said, "Go spend it any way you want. We don't care what you're doing. We're going to do it without you." That's why in Oklahoma, when you fought one of these battles, $1.6 million was spent on the other side, and the people won, and they only spent $130,000. There is an enormous amount of money involved in these things. So I reject it as morally reprehensible, economically unjustifiable, but I think, thirdly, it is logically indefensible. If you just think for a moment with me about the reasons for it, and we evaluate them very quickly, and then secondly, if we expose and dispel the illusions that are associated with gambling. Those two things. Number one, the reasons. We talked about the economy, but that's what they're always going to say. It is an economic boost. Remember, it cannot create wealth. It only diverts wealth. A matter of fact, according to John Warnkitt, University of Illinois, quote, $1 tax revenue that gambling raises creates $3 in costs to handle the economic disruption and the compulsive gambling and crime. So you put in, they say we're going to raise X amount of money, but when the tablets come out and the accountants get through, we spent $3 to every $1 we supposedly received. Not only that, but if it's casino gambling, when they come in, if you own a restaurant, you own a hotel, you're gone. You're over. You cannot exist with them because they're going to sell the food at half of what you can. They're going to sell it cheaper than what you can buy it for. And they're going to give away more rooms than you rent in a year. You are gone. You cannot exist beside them. Some, and then factor in crime and alcohol, gambleholics and so forth. Some say it's entertainment. They say, well, the reason we ought to be able to have it is because that's entertainment. And some people like it. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's not entertainment. Now, just because somebody calls something entertainment doesn't make it entertainment. That doesn't mean we ought to sanction. You say, well, it's entertainment for him. Well, some people, robbing's entertainment, stealing or murder's entertainment, rape's entertainment. We're not going to make some kind of field where they can go do that. Not only that, but it's very contrary. Because again, somebody has to lose for you to win in your entertainment. And all other entertainment, you don't have to do that. And not only that, how many addicts do you know that we have of Six Flags? I mean, you just tell me how many Six Flags addicts you have met. They lost their job. Well, my family broke up once I started going to Six Flags a lot and couldn't get off the merry-go-round. It's not even comparable. If anything, you go to Six Flags one day, it pretty much do you for a while. You get a little older and you'll fade on out. We don't have to give you counseling. It'll all take care of itself naturally. They're not the same. To call it entertainment simply because someone likes it does not make something entertainment. I noticed at the mall when we were coming in last night, they've set up a little fairground there, and there's all kind of little rides and a bunch of little children and everything. But you know what? I bet you our crime rate doesn't go up because of it. I bet you we don't have a whole rush of people going to the hospital because now they're addicted to what happens. And I bet you when it leaves, we don't see riots. But you see that kind of stuff with gambling. The International Center for Youth Gambling Problems, in retrospective studies, indicated that adult problem gamblers reported the onset of pathological behaviors between the ages of 10 years old and 19 years old. And most problem gamblers, they found, began gambling at the age of 10 years old. Problematic gambling among adolescents has been shown to result in increased delinquency, increased crime, disruption of relationships, negative effects on school performance and work activities. Well, not only is it not entertainment, some people then come along and give a reason. They say, well, you know, life's a gamble. So I don't see any difference in gambling there and life's a gamble. Well, there's quite a difference. They say, well, you drive to work and that's a gamble. Yeah, but that's what we call a necessary risk for life. You see, gambling is an unnecessary risk. You don't ever have to gamble. But you do have to drive to work or go to work or mow the lawn or provide some kind of living or get out and do this. Those are necessary risks. But notice the difference. In all of them, we are spending our life to reduce risk. With safer cars, safer laws, even when we're doing sports, we're doing everything we can to eliminate all of the risks. So our whole life is spent on reducing risk. And yet gambling, by its very nature, the essence of it, is risk. Not only that, but it is not the same gamble because, remember, in gambling, if you're playing five-card stud, somebody has to lose for you to win. You cannot all win, but everybody in this building can leave tomorrow, and we can all prosper, and none of us lose. Not only none of us lose, but no one in the world lose. Because it is not zero-sum gain. It is that we can all prosper without the other getting hurt. A man can sell a house to another man. And the man who bought it, he prospered. And the man who sold it, he prospered. And the people who built it, they prospered. And on and on and on. But that is not true with gambling. So they cannot be compared. They are not the same thing. Somebody has to lose. Well, let me give you another one. Somebody says, well, I don't gamble a lot. Just gambling in moderation. That's what I do. And I don't think anything's wrong with that. That's great. This defense is always used. Drinking, whatever it is you're trying to say that it's all right. You just do it. You don't hurt anybody. It's just moderation. Well, what do you say here? If meat caused my brother to stumble, I'll never eat meat again. See, you have to decide whether you're going to just walk in knowledge or love. Paul said, if gambling caused my brother to stumble, I wouldn't gamble again. Drinking caused my brother, because I put my brother up above all of my own pleasure. Well, cause anybody to stumble? International Union of Gospel Missions surveyed 42 missions. Of those responding, 18% said gambling was a factor in their becoming homeless. 70% said gambling makes it harder to get back on their feet. SMR Research Corporation study found that bankruptcy rates are 18% higher in gambling counties with one facility compared to those with no gambling facility, and 23% higher in counties with five facilities. So the more access to gambling, the higher the rate of bankruptcies. Suicides in cities with gambling were up to four times higher than in comparably sized cities where gambling was not legal. Problem gamblers were shown to have a suicide rate 5 to 10 times higher than the rest of the population. 16% of Illinois Gamblers Anonymous members were divorced, and they said it was due to gambling. Dr. Howard Schaefer, the Harvard Medical School for Addiction, says, quote, and listen to this, "We will face in the next decade or so more problems with youth gambling than we'll face with drug abuse." 44% of Illinois Gamblers Anonymous members stole from their work where they worked in order to pay gambling debts. Well, I can handle it. That's not the question. That's not the question. The question is, can your brother handle it? Can your neighbor handle it? You handle it. Can your children handle it? That's the question. If meat causes my brother to stumble, I'll never eat it again. You see, can you enjoy doing something that you know is hurting people that may be weaker than you? You see, gambling is not only addictive, it is alluring. Have you noticed that alcohol or drugs, what we do is we have commercials against them? But with gambling, we have commercials for them. It is alluring. You cannot watch a show where they show you this palatial casino and somebody winning and some that it doesn't draw upon your flesh. It is alluring. So it is not only addictive, it is alluring to the eye and to the pride of life, to the flesh. Another thing people say, well, people are going to gamble anyway. Well, you know, Ronnie, you're kind of backwards. Don't you know that people are going to gamble anyway? And what we ought to do, since they're going to gamble and it's illegal, and by the way, you know, the state doesn't get anything off of it. If we can make it legal, then the state can get taxes off of it, and we can profit by it, and we can control it. I love that one. Now, I don't know who first developed that one, and that doesn't really impress me or amaze me. But you know what amazes me? Is how many people have said it again. Well, I think this drug problem or I think this gambling problem is such a problem, we ought to legalize it so we can control it. Where is the evidence that when we legalize something that is addictive and immoral, that all of a sudden we control it? You see, becoming legal does not make something moral, it just makes it legal. Well, let's look at alcohol. We've got it all legalized, get taxes off of it, and so I suppose this is the example for controlling something like that. In 1999, there were 19,171 alcohol-related deaths. This does not include traffic fatalities. 40% of all traffic fatalities are alcohol-related. In the year 2000, that is down from 50% in 1990. And they attribute it to higher laws. You have to be 21 rather than 18, stricter laws against DWI, and safer cars. But 40%. There are 3.7 million teenage alcoholics, 10 million adult alcoholics, 18 million problem drinkers. In 1 year, the tax revenues from alcohol sales in the United States were $12.6 billion. That's how much the government got off the sales of alcohol in the United States in 1 year. However, sad to report, the cost was $120.8 $8 billion. It cost us 10 times more. It is a horrific problem. And now somebody says, well, you know, like we control alcohol, that's the way we want to control gambling. Well, that's a wonderful thing. That's such a comforting thought. It is a faulty premise when you say that it's illegal and it's wrong, but they're going to do it anyway, so we ought to legalize it. I mean, they're going to rob stores. Well, they're going to do it anyway. Don't you know that? Well, why don't we legalize it and charge a license for them robbing, see? If they rob, get $100,000, they have to pay taxes on it. There's a lot of things we could do. It's just nonsense to think that if we can't control it when it's illegal, what, pray tell, is going to make it all of a sudden magical where we can control it when it's legal? And what is going to? What is going to make it right? Right. Well, not only those reasons, but let me give you some illusions. When these illusions are exposed and those reasons are exposed and refuted, gambling just simply does this. Just dies a natural death. Just collapses. It's all built on false premises. It's all built on illusion. First illusion, that people win. That's an illusion. You say, well, now wait a minute, I gambled and I have won. That's right. If no one ever won, there is not the capacity to have an illusion. In other words, you've got to win, and that gives you the idea that you can win more. Now, I'll give you a few ways I know this. I know it personally. Again, when I was a bookmaker, I learned something, and I've never forgotten it. And I was not a Christian, and I want that recorded, and I wasn't a preacher, and so don't somebody walk out and say, well, our preacher, he books. Not only gambles, but he's a bookie. This was many years ago. But you have people that gamble with you every week, and they're just your regular customers, and you collect on Friday from them, and then they keep gambling if their credit's good and so forth. So I would go to gatherings and parties, and it really took me back at the beginning hearing these things, because it sounds untrue, but it happened all the time. I'd be standing maybe in this circle, and I'd hear them talking about the horse races, gambling, and one of them be talking about how much he won, or I'm standing in the circle with them. Yeah, I hit that horse on Wednesday for $100, and man, it was great, and boy, I had read everything. That's how I won. I'd studied him out. You know, he had a good jockey in her. And I'm sitting there. They just paid me $400 that they lost that week. But that never came up. And I thought, well, that must be just an oddity. Well, sometime they'd say, well, I won $300 this week, hit four horses. But during that month, I had collected $2,000 they had lost. And what I began to see, and I've seen it ever since, is we have an uncanny ability to remember what we won and forget what we lost. That's human nature. Now, when you see these casinos, and they are palatial, and they fly people out on what's called junkets, they give free rooms, or you can rent a room and a fine hotel in Las Vegas, cheaper than you can anywhere else. Food is cheaper than anywhere else. You know why? Where do they get the money to pay for that? They don't have to charge you in food, and they don't have to charge you a high rate for your room. They know if they get you out there, you gamble, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You cannot win against the house. You say, well, I won one day. Over time, you will not win. It is an illusion. That's an illusion. Secondly, that people want more gambling. Somebody said, well, if the people of the state want it, then we ought to have it. Well, let me tell you this. It's not get more gambling they want, and I know there are some, but I'm talking about the population as a whole. It is not more gambling. It is what they are promised will come if gambling is accepted. We're going to have better schools, we're going to have more jobs, we're going to have more police and safer streets if you vote for gambling. But if you go out and say, listen, we're going to give safer streets, more police, more jobs, better education without gambling, or we can do it with gambling, Which one do you want? Gambling will lose every time without exception. It's even losing while these promises are being made. So it's not that people want more gambling. That's an illusion. It is that they want the things that are promised with it. Third, it is an illusion that the state can promote a something-for-nothing mentality and maintain the work ethic. Now, we know that the work ethic has declined in America, and there are several causes for this, and they work synergistically. And one of them is to continue to create this illusion that you can get something for nothing. So if it's real, then why wouldn't you do that rather than working 8 hours a day for the rest of your life? A fourth illusion, that legal eliminates the illegal. We talked about that, but that is always brought up, and that's an illusion. Fifth, you can affect a strong society by accentuating the weakness of the people. When somebody says we want to build a better, stronger society by legalizing gambling, you cannot build a stronger society by accentuating the weaknesses of human beings. And by the way, at every time that they have lotteries, it's what's called regressive taxation. They find out that the most lottery tickets are purchased in the poorest areas of the state. In other words, the people that are spending the most on lottery tickets are the people who can least afford it. You see, it is profiting off the weakness. The fifth illusion is to believe that our government officials can replace the crime bosses in promoting gambling behavior and still have a society that has the moral wherewithal for self-governance. That is an illusion. And again, the breakdown in society, it is always wrong to point to one thing. It is a multitude of things that are working synergistically to break down society. I have an article by Joseph Napolitan. Joseph Napolitan, he was the political consultant to the organization that fought to get casino gambling in Atlanta. He has a 38-year career in political campaigns that he ran in the United States and 20 other countries on 5 continents. He headed it up. And this is what he says. This was the worst mistake I have ever made in 38 years of running political campaigns. He said, I did not deliberately set out to mislead the voters of New Jersey or Atlanta City. I really believed the claims we were making. I sincerely thought that casino gambling would be the boon that Atlanta City so badly needed. I believed my own propaganda until the events proved me wrong. This is what he said. The crime rate in Atlanta City tripled. It went from 50th in the nation per capita to first. 40% of the local restaurants in Atlanta closed. The number of homeless people increased by 2,000%. Property values dropped. And listen to this. Almost 200 homes of persons who refused to sell their property to the casinos burned to the ground in arson-related fires. I'm sure it was none of the casino owners. More people went on welfare, shelters were jammed, an unseemly number of teenagers became gambling addicts, prostitution was rampant. He's one of the number one spokespersons in America right now against gambling. And this is a man that gave his life to bring it to fruition. A few centuries ago, a lady named Susanna had a son named John Wesley. He'd ask her a series of questions. He was going off to school at Oxford. What a wise woman. She said, when you judge the lawfulness of a pleasure, take this rule. Whatever weakens your reason impairs the tenderness of your conscience, obscures your sense of God, or takes away the relish of spiritual things. Whatever increases the authority of your body over your mind, that thing is sin for you, however innocent it may be in and of itself. When I look at our six principles, there are four of them that gambling of any kind, doesn't matter, violate. I think it violates all six. Four of them, it unarguably violates. It is self-evident. Number one, edify. Does it edify? No. Number two, does it potentiate enslavement? Undeniably. Does it provide an example of following Christ? No. And let me ask you, is it expedient? Does it give you the advantage in following and knowing God and being used by God? The answer is undeniably no. We're talking about walking in the freedom of Jesus Christ. Somebody says, well, you know, I just don't want to be in bondage and not be able to do certain things. My friend, that is bondage. Freedom is in Jesus Christ.